This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, I'm going to admit something here right now that I'm kind of embarrassed and ashamed to admit. At 52 plus years on this earth, sports, professional sports broadcaster, sports talk radio host, golfer. Later in life, I picked up golf, but you know, in my 20s, but it's okay. Golfer, love golf. And I just found out literally 60 seconds ago that this tune has a name from Josh.
I had no idea.
I didn't know.
I didn't know this had a name.
Yeah, it's called Augusta. It's by Dave Loggins. It was written in 1981.
Okay, and if you had said, "Hey, what's that thing called?" I would say, "Oh, it's probably called the Masters theme, right?" Like that might be the attached name. I thought maybe, and maybe this is true. Actually, here's the question I have for you. Okay, now we're gonna go down this rabbit hole. If you can help me with this, Josh, was the song made called Augusta just because somebody was in Georgia and they liked living in Augusta and then the Masters said, we're going to take this? Or was the song made for the Masters?
From what I can tell here from my Google search for the name, it looks like it might have been named or made for the Masters itself and then CBS picked it up. I don't know, though, if it just is a coincidence that they found it the year it was written, because it got picked up like the year or two after it was written. There's also, apparently, there's lyrics for it. We only ever hear this version, but apparently there's lyrics for it. I'm going to see if I can find
those.
Yeah, I'll see if I can. The lyrics, it's springtime in the valley on Magnolia Lane. It's the Augusta National and the master of the game. Who'll wear that green coat on Sunday afternoon? Who'll walk the 18th fairway singing this tune? Augusta, your dogwoods and pines, they play on my mind like a song. Augusta, it's you that I love, and it's you that I'll miss when I'm gone. Wow.
Those are the words. Those are the lyrics. Okay, so that answers the question I just had. Okay, but wait, that answers the first question I had, which is, was it written before, is it just written randomly and they picked it up? No, it's clearly about the golf tournament, because they're talking about the green jacket. Like, the song was written for that.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, did someone, like, from CBS say, hey, you have to write this song?
No,
I see what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, was the song, like, written a long time ago, and then we're like, hey, there's a great song about the city of Augusta, let's play it for the Masters? Or did someone actually go, I'm going to write a song about the golf tournament, the Masters? Clearly, that's what happened here, okay? Because there's the green jacket is included in the lyrics. Now, when you read that to me, all I could think of was Jim Nance reading it.
Jim Nance.
The only thing you're missing is him saying, hello, friends, and then reading that. Like, come on, right? Shouldn't Jim Nantz do that from now on? He should open up the Masters by reading what you just read.
I mean, it kind of goes like a poem, to be honest. Like, it,
right, of course.
It's more of a poem than lyrics, I think.
Yes. I mean, right. If you could find like the actual lyrics of someone singing it, that would be outstanding. I don't know if that exists. It's got it somewhere. It probably does. I just learned about this. Literally 52 plus years. When was this made? 1971, you said?
81.
Oh, 81. 1981. All right. Well, I was a kid.
I have found a lyric version.
Oh, can we play it? Can we play it? The lyric version of, what is this called? It's just called Augusta. It's just called Augusta. That's it, right?
Yep, and it's by Dave Loggins. It's him singing, too.
Not to be confused with Kenny Loggins from Footloose fame, who wrote Footloose and many other movie tracks back in the 1980s. Go ahead.
Well, it's springtime in the valley on Magnolia Lane. It's the Augusta National and the Masters of the game.
I love it. It's great.
Wear that green coat on Sunday afternoon.
Did he say green coat?
Yep, that he did.
Singing this tune.
Oh my gosh, here comes the refrain. Here we go.
Augusta, your dogwoods and pines, you play.
This is amazing. Josh, they should be playing this on CBS, right? Come on.
I can't believe I've never heard this before with
me
the lyrics.
Neither.
Like, I didn't even know these existed.
I mean, I am blown away right now. I really am. Like, I know. Little things in life that you get to me. And make me go, holy cow, but this is one of them. Luka drops over 40 last night in his old team. I don't care. I'm blown away by the Masters lyrics. This is great. Welcome to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today. That is outstanding. It totally fits. And I could totally just see Jim Nantz singing that, saying that, playing that. That's what they should do. On CBS. Now, a good question is, you mentioned CBS having that song. Does CBS own the rights to the musical version? Because I know the Masters is always on CBS, but in this day and age, what if the rights change? Does another network get to play that tune?
That's true. I wonder if they own it, or maybe if they, you know, write it. Then it'd be one thing. But if he wrote it and then they just picked it up, that'd be completely different. And who knows if that rights could change eventually. I mean, I don't think CBS would ever risk losing that, though, right? Like, that's their thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, listen, things can change. In February, I remember this happened. In February 24, I'm reading, the Michael Jackson estate sold half of his publishing and recording master's catalog to Sony Music Group for at least $600 million. So they actually own Michael Jackson's, like, you can sell the rights to these things, obviously. So I'm blown away. It's a great way to start a Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. The Masters is rolling. Thanks for being with me today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Masters, a lot about the Masters, actually, with our guy, Brian Koziol. He's going to join me at 11 a.m. today. We're going to get into Scotty Scheffler's chances of repeating and winning 3 of 4. We'll get into where Rory is right now. I think he's been playing some excellent golf, maybe some of the best golf of any golfer right now on tour. And a little bit more on the Masters, maybe some picks, who he likes maybe to come out from, you know, maybe not one of the favorites, let's say. So we'll get with Brian Koziol at 11 a.m. on the Masters. At 11:30 today, it is the radio return of our guy, Patrick Hammer. Pat, back on TV. Good to see him. And now he's back on radio. And the reason why I'm going to have Pat on today, I reached out yesterday and said, Hey, buddy. He's not my... That's the Monday thing, right? See, I normally do that. Hey, buddy. I actually text those words sometimes. I've probably texted those words to you, Josh. The hey, buddy.
You have. Hey, buddy. I think you did it today, actually.
Oh, I did? That's amazing.
You might have. I don't know. I might be wrong. But you definitely have before.
I talk to text. So when I talk, that's how Hey Buddy started, the segment Hey Buddy I do on Mondays during football season. The segment Hey Buddy started because J.J. Torito, who's a producer down for the Bills and Sabres. I was doing shows down there years ago, and he said, you should do a segment called Hey Buddy, because you always say Hey Buddy to people. And I'm like, I do? I didn't realize it. It's kind of a reflex. It's just what I do. You know, so I go, Hey Buddy. So when I talk the text, I do it too. I go, I click the button. I go, Hey Buddy, today for the show, and I'll say something to you. So anyway, that's what I did to Pat Hammer. I said, Hey Buddy, we haven't heard from you in a while, and it is Easter break for many kids and families next week, including mine. I will be gone until next Thursday from this show. You have me today, and then next Thursday is the last time you're going to hear from me. We'll be on a plane down to Florida in some sunshine with the fam. Going to hit the Sabres game this weekend in Tampa. Just randomly, ironically happened like it did a couple years ago. Same thing happened a couple years ago. Josh, I think it was 2 years ago, I think. Might have been three, but I think it was 2 years ago. It happened to fall Sabres at Lightning while during break, and we were at the game where Ilya Lyubushkin scored in overtime.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was 2 years ago. That was the one point where they missed the playoffs by 1 point. Mm. I remember that game very vividly. That was
It was an amazing game. It was back and forth. Sabres were down. They came back. They tied it. They took the lead. Lightning came back and tied it. Lightning tied it with a pulled goalie. Lightning had in that game, they had a power play in overtime and hit the goalpost. And then like 20 seconds later, Lyubushkin comes down and scores in overtime on a breakaway. It was great. It was fantastic. We were cheering, obviously. Max had his Sabres flag. It was great. And then we were walking out of the arena, and some adult was not being very adult-like to me and my son, and saying things and using hand gestures, which I think that were very inappropriate to give to at the time, a 9-year-old. But, you know, I mean, whatever. I was going to make him social media famous. I took the guy's picture, and I decided not to do that. Like, I'm not going to do that. Guy's just being an idiot. So let him be an idiot. We'll go home. We'll be happy. Go back to the hotel. Hopefully that happens again. Not what the guy did, but the Sabres winning in Tampa. That's what I'm going to do this weekend, and going to head down. I'm not playing golf this weekend. Just too much going on. Going to see some family. Going to hit Orlando. Going to hit Tampa. And I will see some friends. Just don't have time to really play golf. I'd love to, but just too many things you want to do that, you know, you want to be with people and hang out with people. So won't be doing that, but you have me today, and then you have me next Thursday. In the meantime, and I know next week, even Thursday and Friday, is still Easter break for a lot of people. It's not for everybody, I think. Not every child, not every school has it, but a lot do. So I figured, hey, let's get with Pat Hammer. Let's talk about this weather. Josh, I don't know what it's like in Amherst this morning, but here in Studio Capaccio in the city of Buffalo, it is snowing. In fact, it was, I should say, 15 minutes ago. It is not now. It was 15 minutes ago.
It hasn't snowed a flake here yet, but it is very cold, as it was yesterday. But I'm very happy to report we don't have snow here in Amherst. So that's crazy. Snow in Buffalo on April 10th. Gotta love it.
Yeah, I know, right? And look, we had 70 degrees a couple times in March, so we'll get with Bat Hammer about all that. Here's the good news. I think he's going to tell us, because I've been looking at the long range. I think we're getting back into a more average pattern in about a week or so, because I looked when we come back, like, and I come back from Florida next week, it's like mid-50s, near 60. I'm like, okay, I can handle that, and that's kind of where we should be this time of year. So we kind of got to get through this a little bit. And we will. While I'm down there, it's going to be beautiful, 70s, 80s, looking forward to it. It's going to be great. Then we come back, it's time for the NFL draft. And going to have about a week and a half ramp up to that, 2 week ramp up to that, once we come back. In fact, one week ramp up, I should say. It's 2 weeks from tonight. The NFL draft is 2 weeks from tonight. That's when it starts. In Green Bay, Thursday night, round one. People ask me all the time, you go to the draft? I actually have been to two NFL drafts. But that was a long time ago, before I was working at WGR. I was actually down in Florida working in radio. And it was actually the year before. Anyway, once I don't know. I can't remember the exact timing of if I was still in college for one of them. I think I was working radio. And then when I went to Florida. But the point is, it was 96 and 97. I believe those were the 2 years that I was there. And that was at Radio City Music Hall. And they had the draft right there. It's changed, obviously, over the years. They've had it different places. Paramount Theater, I think it was. Kajana Carter was the number one pick 1 year when I went to the NFL draft. And it's cool to be there. It's a great experience. And I think if you're a TV station, you're a TV personality, you know, the draft is different. It's visual, right? You go and you get all the video of the people getting drafted and going up on stage, things like that. But for me, what I do as a beat reporter here on the radio, way more important to be here in Buffalo, because that's where we hear from Brandon Bean. That's where we hear from really the person who gets drafted. We usually do a conference call. but anything that happens, all the Bills people are here. Now, yes, the Bills are actually, they'll send somebody, they'll send a contingent to the draft to make the pick. And there's a great, great video, by the way, the Bills shared. If you haven't seen this yet, it's super awesome. Through Make-A-Wish, the Bills had a young man come into the facility, and Brandon Bean got to meet with him yesterday. And Brandon Bean surprised him and said, this is all, you can go to BuffaloBills.com or you can actually go to their Twitter feed at Buffalo Bills. Tommy, and I hope I say his last name right, Paris Miso, he's going to be announcing the Bills' first pick. And this is a great, great video if you go watch it. It's through Make-A-Wish, and the Bills did this right, and it's going to be awesome for Tommy. So go check out that video. But that's what happens in Green Bay, because Brandon Bean won't be in Green Bay. He'll be here in Buffalo. That's why I'll be in Buffalo. Like, a lot of media will be in Buffalo. We'll be in the media room. We'll bring that to you round one of the NFL draft. That is Thursday night, April 24th, 2 weeks from tonight. What I want to do today is get a little bit of a temperature gauge from all of you as far as the Bills are concerned and where you are with what you think they should do. Okay? I did post the Bills' current roster on my Twitter feed at Sal Sports. Someone said, can you post the current roster? And I realized, you're right, I have not done that in a while. So I made sure that I did that. And if you look at the roster, I've colored, coded in yellow all of the new additions to the team. You may say, why is Jake Camarda, for example, not color-coded? Well, he was on the practice squad when the season ended. So anybody in the practice squad is not a new addition. KJ Hamler, Jalen Virgil, they're not new additions. Branson Dean, Zion Logue, they were on the practice squad. So they aren't new additions. New additions are guys who were not in the organization. The Bills don't have a ton of them. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Here are the new additions. Running back, Darrington Evans. Wide receivers, Joshua Palmer and Laviska Shenault, who's more of a kick returner. Offensive lineman, mostly guard, Kendrick Green. Defensive lineman, edge rushers, Joey Bosa and Michael Hoyt, clearly the biggest position where they've added already. Michael Hoyt, of course, suspended 6 games. So is Larry Ogunjobi, new addition, defensive tackle. Cornerback, Dane Jackson. Safety, Derek Forrest. Punter, Brad Robbins, along with Camarda, he'll be the punter heading to camp. So, there are 10 new additions on the Bills. They're going to add more through the draft. They have 68 total players right now. You're allowed 90. Someone asked me the other day also, when do the Bills have to be at 90? They don't. You never have to be at 90. In fact, I don't even think there's a floor. There might be, like, maybe the NFLPA says you got to have at least 85. I've never seen that. I got to go look. But you don't have to be at 90. The Bills have had 88 or 89 in points. But you are allowed up to 90. That's the maximum you can have to take to camp, to have on your roster when you go to training camp. So as of right now, they need 22 more people, 22 more players. They are scheduled to have 10 draft picks. Of those 10 draft picks, they are scheduled to have 3 in the first 2 rounds over the first 2 days. Now, round one is Thursday. Rounds 2 and 3 are Friday. The Bills do not have a third round pick right now. They have 2 in the second round, though. So even though they're scheduled to have 2 picks on day 2, they're all, both in the second round. Those are 56 and 62. You put them with pick number 30 in the first round, the Bills have a total of 3 picks scheduled right now, first 2 rounds, pick number 30, pick number 56, pick number 62. One of those is because of the Stephon Diggs trade with the Houston Texans, but it's actually the Vikings pick. Okay, so I have a question, and I threw this out on Twitter. There's already 54 responses to this. I love it. Means I'm getting a lot of good replies, and you can do that too. It's called Getting Connected with Our Fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Through the first 2 rounds, picks 30, 56, and 62, not specific players, folks. I don't want you to say, I want them to draft this guy. I mean, because you know how the board's going to fall. And I understand that that is contingent on this question. I get it. This is not a perfect question, all right? But let's have some fun. Positions or trades? What's your ideal scenario with each of these? 30, 56, and 62. Now, is it just a sum of, hey, out of those first 3 picks, I want 2 defensive linemen? Out of some of those first 3 picks, is it I want to trade up and get a higher first-round pick? Out of that sum of first 3 picks, is it trade down, get more picks, get another third-round pick, more cracks at better players, at more players? Anything is on the table. Or do you want specifically, hey, at 30, they need to go D-tackle, or they need to go wide receiver? That's what I'm looking for. And you can call me up here. We have time before we get to the 11 o'clock hour to hear from Brian Kozio. Open phone lines right now on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. So give me a call. Tell me what you'd like the Bills to do with those first three picks, ideally. 30, 56, and 62. If you want to be specific on each one, that's fine. Or collectively as a group, what are you trying to get out of those first three picks? Not specific players. I get that. 803-0550 is the number. At this point, I would say, I'm confident in saying, how about this? Confident. I don't know if confidence is the word. I would be surprised if the Bills take an offensive player with any of those picks. I actually would be surprised. I think the Bills are going straight defense rounds one and two right now with the three picks. Now, if there is truly a guy there on offense, of course, they'll take a wide receiver. If there's someone who falls they really, really like and he's falling, I wouldn't discount it. But at this point, I'd be surprised if the Bills pick any offense within those first three picks. Now, if the Bills were to trade and go into the third round, I think that opens up offense a little bit. Because I think right now, where they are picking, they can get more impact players on defense, and that's what they need. I'm thinking two defensive linemen and a corner right now. That's what I'm thinking out of those first three. Two defensive linemen and a corner. I think two corners would be a little too much to ask. I don't know where the spots are on the roster for guys like that right now. Two defensive linemen, though, you can definitely use. You have a rotation. You have Michael Hoyt. You have Larry Ogunjobi. They're both suspended. Clearly, you can use them, and you need those players. It's literally need meets want or value, whatever. So let's do it. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Let's start us off with Joe. Hold on 1 second, Joe. I'm going to pull you up. Give me 1 second, buddy. I just have to reorganize my screen here. 803-0550 is the number. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good, thanks.
You know, last year I really wanted them to trade up and get Brian Thomas. Obviously, we didn't do that. So this year I feel like if Will Johnson makes it out of the top 15, you go and get him, or maybe call up Seattle, give a later second, or maybe probably later second to get Woolen. So this way we can go into the draft and literally not have a glaring hole or need.
Okay, I appreciate it. And listen, Will Johnson is fantastic. He has family here in Buffalo, by the way, Western New York. I don't think he's getting out of the top 15. I mean, I guess there could be a chance for that. I think I already had some sort of injury that prevented him from doing some workouts. But, you know, I don't think he's getting out of the top 15. He's considered one of the top corners in this draft. Looking more, less for specific and more for in general, but that's okay. Go ahead. Another Sal, fellow Sal in Lackawanna. What's up, Sal?
Hey, so I actually got kind of named after you. That's funny.
No, you did not.
I did, but it's a story for another day. I got the nickname.
Okay.
I wanted to get your two cents on, I know you watched the Super Bowl, and I'm speaking on all of Bills Mafia and how we're probably envious on the Philly D-line. And what D-linemen do you like coming out of the draft?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them. I think Shamar Stewart would be a good fit for the Bills. I like Derek Harmon a lot from Oregon. There's quite a few. But, yeah, I mean, listen, take your pick of these defensive linemen. I don't know who's going to be you never know at 30, right, who's going to be there, A, and you never know who's going, Mason Graham, right, who's going to be the guy that rises up to be that next great defensive lineman, you know, in the NFL. At 30, is there going to be one of those? But I do like that. And Sal, I think you bring up a good point. You watch the Super Bowl, and of course you look and say, that's what the Bills need. But to me, take two of them in the first three picks. Take two of them. That's what the Bills need to do. Two defensive linemen and a secondary play, a corner. That's what I say. Marty in West Seneca. Hi, Marty.
Hey, how you doing? It's a beautiful
good, Marty.
Morning. Snowing out.
Is it snowing where you are in West Seneca?
Just stop.
Yeah, me too. Me too here in the city. It's going to get a little warmer, though. You're okay, Marty. This is Buffalo.
Okay,
we're on the right track.
I'm staying in the house. I got the heat on.
I love it. What's up, buddy?
No, I just think like defensive back or defensive line.
Either or, if you take three, sorry, buddy. If you take all three picks, 30, 56, and 62, and I said you could take two of those positions and one of the other, which two are you doing? You know what I mean?
Defensive
would
line.
Would you rather? Yeah, I think so, too.
But then
I think so
what
too,
happens
Marty.
At number 30? I don't know who the top wide receiver is.
Well, there's a good debate on that. I guess Tet McMillan probably would be in this draft, but the Bills aren't going to get him. I don't think it's interesting with him. He's very polarizing.
Off the board, huh?
Well, let me ask you this. Let's forget who it is. Would you take a wide receiver at 30?
If it's one of the top three wide receivers.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how their board falls, and I appreciate it. I'm not a wide receiver guy at 30. I just don't know where he's playing. I mean, if you take a wide receiver at 30, you have to kind of vault him above Keon Coleman and Joshua Palmer, right? I mean, I just think, and I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, yeah, I know the Bills have said what they said about Keon Coleman. He's still a big part of what they do. We got another Sal. This isn't the same Sal. Is it, Josh? The same Sal? No, I don't think so. Do we really have two Sals that have called this morning?
We've got three Sals for the price of one today.
There's another Sal on a cell. This is the second Sal today. Man, this is great. Hi, Sal. How are you?
Well, real good, Sal. How are you?
I'm good. Are you a Salvatore as well?
Yes.
Beautiful. Love it. What's on your mind, buddy?
All right. Well, here's my take. I keep hearing people talk about receiver, and I don't get it. So here's my overall. The Bills scored a lot of points last year, right?
And they had the league MVP at quarterback.
Right. So he's going to keep scoring a lot of points, and we're going to score a lot of touchdowns. If we can shore up this defense, what happens? We put the ball in Josh's hands even more often, right? So the offense that nobody expected to do a lot after Diggs left actually performed pretty darn well. So in my eyes, we need a cornerback, you know, defensive line, safety, and shore that end up. And put the ball in Josh's hands more often. Stop letting these teams just have their way running up and down the field.
Sal, there's a reason why your name's Salvatore, because I agree with you 100%. I love that take. Thank you. I'm on board with you. Great. Thank you, buddy. Thanks for the phone call. I agree 100%. It's exactly what I think about wide receiver. I couldn't have said it any better from what I said a minute ago. I'd be stunned, and I think it'd be a waste of resources, waste of assets to draft a wide receiver at 30. Sorry, unless you're getting all of a sudden one of the great wide receivers. If you have somebody really high, whoever that is on your board, the Bills have somebody ranked really high at wide receiver. I don't know, is that Golden, whoever it is, McMillan, whatever. And all of a sudden he's down there and they're like, we just can't pass up this guy. He's going to change everything about our offense. You'd still have to convince me, but I think it's a waste of resources. I agree with Sal. You set a franchise record for points scored. You had the league MVP. You have a second-year player, Keon Coleman, you just used last year. You just paid Josh Palmer, $8, $9 million a year. Curtis Samuel's on the team for whatever. Right? I mean, like, where's he playing? Where's the snaps coming from? Khalil Shakir's there. I don't get it. So I'm going defense, and I like that. All right, Mark, you stay with me, as well as everybody else who's calling right now. 803-0550. I like it. We got a good debate going, a good question here for you to answer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. How would you like to see the first three picks play out in totality for the Buffalo Bills? We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll do more of that with your phone calls. Brian Koziol at 11 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. We are loaded with phone calls, and I love it. Let's get to Mark in West Seneca. Talking Bills draft, first three picks, how they look for you, what you'd like to see. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Sal, how are you?
Good, thanks.
It's good. Hey, I tried to lay this scenario out yesterday with Steve and Brownie on One Bills Live, and he got a little confused. I think it's very...
Well, try to keep it succinct then. I will not be confused, and I have a bunch of phone calls, so do it the best you can with focusing my attention on what you want.
Okay, quickly. I'd love to see him take number 30, trade back into the second round. I don't care where they end up, okay? And with that, pick up a third rounder. Then take that third rounder and parlay that with whatever you need to out of our fourth, fifth, and sixth rounders. I don't care if it's both fourths, whatever it is. And move into the second round again, thus ending up with four.
Okay, hold on. I got this. I'm writing it down. I want to make sure I got the flow chart right. Third, go back into the second.
Right. You would end up
now with three twos.
You would end up with four
and a third.
Okay. Right. Okay. Right.
Yep.
There you are.
Yep. Hold on. And then you would take. You would take a third and what to go back into the second. I think the issue, first of all, I would have is you got to make sure everything falls in time to do this, right? Like, because a lot of times these trades happen when you're on the clock, when you're that late. These are not trades that happen today. You know what I mean? But go ahead.
Well, think about it. If the first round is just one day. So after the first round ends and you make that pick to make that trade to drop into the second and pick up the third, now you've got the whole night and the next day to take that third and parlay it whatever you need to move into the second round then.
So okay, what's the end game, Mark? Why are you doing all this?
So I end up with four picks in the top 64, and I can take four defensive players if I want, or even scratch that wide receiver itch everybody seems to always have, take a wide receiver and three defensive players, whatever combination of defensive players that they want.
So you would rather have four picks in the top 64 than three in the top 62?
Yes. Without a doubt.
That's fine. And yeah, I agree. But I'm saying to go down. You would rather go down, not have number 30. You would drop down for one extra pick in that same time frame. You would drop down. I don't know if that's worth it because you're picking 30 and you're dropping all the way down. If you're only going to get one extra pick in that group, I'd still rather be picking a little higher if that makes sense.
Yeah, but the word is that I've been listening to since Draftniks have been talking. There's not a lot of difference.
Agreed.
In all of those, all those spots, all those numbered picks from what 15 down to the end of the second round. So,
Mark, you're not wrong. I agree with that. I'm not even pushing back. I think for me, it's more about value, though, and getting those rounds. But you're right about that. You know, more cracks in those rounds. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. Good thought. Thank you for explaining that. Let's go to Butch on the East Side. What's up, Butch?
My brother from another beautiful mom. Thanks for taking my call. I love WGR, I love MSG, and to all the fans who watch and listen, Butch from the East Side, I love you dearly. Listen, bro, I got something to tell you, and that's serious. People talk about drafting a wide receiver, all right? I'm going to put that to bed. Reason why, bro, put it this way, in the first round, second round, put that to bed. Reason why, I really believe Buffalo is going to give Terrell Shavers the opportunity that he deserves and put him in that tree, that wide receiver room, and give him a real opportunity to make that 53. That's my opinion.
Well, now, let me stop you right there. I'm going to give you a virtual high five. We are in agreement here. Whether it's Tyrell Shavers is fine, and I don't disagree with that part, but excuse me, I agree with you 100%, Butch, that I'd be stunned if they took a wide receiver. I really would.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like you said, Sal, with the exception of McMillan, I'm going to use one wide receiver. Forget Bowles and forget all the rest of the Texas wide receivers. Let me use McMillan. If McMillan drops out of the top 15 and go all the way to 30, I see him maybe trying to get him. They might not even get him. But knowing Brandon Bean, he's going to take the best player available at that point. I can see it. But really, we don't need him, you know, to be honest. We have enough receivers that didn't give you, like I said before, didn't even get the opportunity. KJ Hamlin. It's a lot of receivers that never really got the opportunity that can add to what we have. Plus, Palmer's here. We have tight ends. We have enough people to throw the ball to. Not saying we wouldn't need somebody else, because I have a player I'm going to speak about in a minute that plays that position, but we're not going to take him as early. Now, saying that, this is the year that Brandon Bean solidifies the defensive line for years to come. I really believe we get a couple of D tackles. I really believe we get maybe a corner and leave it at that. Now, moving back in the second, maybe in the last half of the draft, Sal, and thanks for taking my call. I want you to kiss the queen for me and give my nephew a high five, please, and tell them both I love them. But I want to say about teaching. We get a lot of players from a lot of different colleges, but let's look at somebody in Colorado. When you got the Deion Sanders, teachings, et cetera. Look at a Jimmy Horn Jr. Look at a Shiloh Sanders. Maybe Beckett in the fifth round, the fourth round. You're bringing two players in here who were really taught well, that really could come into our team and our shelf and add to what we have later on in the draft. They're ready to go. They've been taught like pros. They've been acting like pros. They've been around pros. Nothing, the lights is not going to be big for these two kids. And I just want Buffalo maybe to look at that Colorado program, look at a Jimmy Horn Jr. as a receiver. You can put him in a room later on, or put him on a practice squad or whatever. And a Shiloh Sanders who could come in and play maybe a safety or a special teamers, et cetera. It's something to look at. But I love you, my brother, man. And I take care of yourself. And thanks so much for taking Butch's call, bro.
You're the best, buddy. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you. That is Butch on the East Side. Good stuff right there. Yeah. Shiloh Sanders, I don't know. I mean, he's not considered a huge prospect, but And we'll see. Obviously, great bloodlines. We know that. Rob in Tonawanda. What's up, Rob?
How you doing, Sal?
Good, thanks.
I'm not. My name's not Sal, but I am Italian, so we got that in common.
You got. I got another Sal on hold. Believe it or not, I'm gonna get to him in a minute. So,
oh my God,
unbelievable! I know. Go ahead. I know.
Anyway, I was watching the Super Bowl, and I know everyone's talking about how amazing the Eagles' defensive line was, which they definitely were. But what I noticed more than anything is that their corners and their linebackers covered like glue, and they weren't. They kept their bodies facing the quarterbacks instead of chasing the receivers or the backs, and gave Mahomes no targets to access. And that's what I think was a key component to the Philadelphia front line, D-line, doing what they did. So I believe that the Bills should focus in on cornerbacks and linebackers in the draft.
Interesting. Linebackers, I can't agree with that, but I do know that, you know, with Matt Milano's contract restructure, as of now, probably looks like he's not going to be here in 2026. But Brandon Bean said that's still possible. I mean, if he has a really good year, they could re-sign him. They don't need another middle linebacker. I don't agree with about the linebackers. I think that they have to concentrate on D-line. Their linebackers are good. They have good linebackers. They have to stay healthy at linebackers, what it is. And maybe this is part of your point, but man, you got Terrell Bernard, you got Joe Andreessen behind him who looked really good last year. And then, of course, Dorian Williams led the team in tackles last year when he filled in for Matt Milano. So don't agree about the linebackers, but I appreciate the call and I understand the thought. Another Sal. Truly another Sal? Is it Sal in North Tonawanda? What's up, Sal?
Sal, hello, sir. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you. I'm a huge fan of the local amateur sports around here. Real quick side story. The first ever Buffalo State game I got to watch on TV when Time Warner Cable was a thing. You were actually the commentator on it, and it was a fantastic game against Cortland. I'll never forget it. It was pretty cool to see you. But staying on the point of the local amateur sports, big UB guy here, you know, was with them through the thick and thin, you know, through the days where we were living high with you know, the boys like Naaman Roosevelt and James Starks, to when things got a little low with Coach Quinn. But now we're back on the rise. What do we think of Sean Dolak coming out, and where do we think he's going to go? Is he going to get drafted, or maybe possibly after the draft? What are your thoughts, Sal?
Sal, first of all, thanks for all that. I appreciate it. Yeah, man. You know, it's been a while since I've done some of that color commentary, play by play for some of the local college scene, but done that over the years. ESPN Plus, UB Women, UB Men, Buff State, whether it's basketball, football, hockey. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. At this point, I think Sean Dolak's going to get drafted. And if you would have asked me that a month ago, I don't know if I would have said that because he was not invited to any combine, any bowl game. And generally, they do that based by how they kind of read the room a little bit and get a feel. And I think we all know that all these people who make these decisions miss the mark in some capacity with Sean Dolak, right? Then he has his pro day and he just blows it away. And he would have been like in the top five or six of linebackers on speed, on strength, you know, the bench press, the 40, all that kind of stuff. I think Sean Dolak's getting drafted on day three. I don't know if he's a fit for the Bills. I know people would love him here. He'd have to compete basically with Joe Andreessen and or Dorian Williams. And yeah, as much as I just said, maybe this is Matt Milano's last year. We don't know how that's going to play out. Could very well be. You still got to compete with Joe Andreessen, Dorian Williams, and Eddie Ulofosio. Like, I don't know where there's a spot for him here. But I'm rooting for him to get drafted, to make a team, to be on a team. I love the local, as you say, the local sports scene. Me too, Sal. As you know, I'm a champion for it here, right? I'd love to highlight local people who do well in any endeavor, but especially our sports scene. You know, like Carlin Hartman, literally like first team All-Western New York basketball player in 1990. And now he's a national champion basketball coach, associate head coach at the University of Florida. Like, that's a great story. And I love talking about stuff like that. So I would love to see Sean Dolak get drafted and make an impact. And the story of Joe Andreessen was amazing last year because of where he came from and being local, and partly because he wasn't drafted, right? He was just this tryout guy and he got a job and he made the team and all that. I think Dolak could have a very similar type of story, even if he gets drafted, in the regard that everyone kind of counted him out in the pre-draft process. So that would be great. Thanks a lot for the phone call. We'll take a timeout. Stick with me. I'll get to the phone calls that are on air before we hit the top of the hour. Brian Colziel joins me to talk Masters at 11 a.m. Pat Hammer on weather coming this weekend and during Easter break for a lot of people out there next week. That's at 11:30 today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, speaking of the NFL draft, tune in to Chopin the Bulldog for our annual pre-draft special, Thursday, April 17th. I'll be back, I told you, 1 week from today. 4 to 6:30 p.m. is when that is airing. It's streaming live on YouTube. We're going to bring you the latest insights and mock draft predictions, insider info, guest appearances from Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase, Nate Geary. I'll be there as well. The show is presented by your Upstate Honda dealers. Visit your local Upstate Honda dealer for excellent deals on the entire Honda lineup, including the all-new Honda Passport. Josh, you just told me that Jeremy White actually knew the lyrics to that Masters song?
Yeah, apparently does. He sang them the other day, and I thought he was joking, but apparently
he's a Masters nerd. Jeremy, you're a Masters nerd. I love it. All right, let's go to Mike in South Buffalo talking draft, first three picks for the Bills. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Sal. What's up, buddy? I'm playing football.
All right, Mike. Good to talk to you, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, let's go Ricky Williams, blockbuster, and just go get Travis Hunter.
Woo! He is great. He really is. I mean, he's a sensational player, sensational athlete. What would you do with him if you got him?
Play him both ways.
Full time as much as possible?
As much as he can handle.
All right. Just like you in flag football, Mike. That's what he'd be like. Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it. You got it. Yeah, no doubt. Thank you. Anthony in Buffalo. What's up, Anthony? How are you, man?
Hey, Sal. How you doing?
Good,
you know,
thanks.
For me, I'm on the trade route as well. For me, I would love to see us go after Trey Hendrickson. I know it's going to take a first-round pick, but it's just going to solidify that we need somebody to attack the quarterback. And then, obviously, by having somebody that can rush and attack the QB will allow our safeties to have a little more help because the ball, they're not going to have 3-4 seconds to throw the football. So
it would cost a first rounder and a lot of money. I think that's more of the issue. You know, if you could just get him for the first rounder and then some, it's one thing, but I don't know how they can pay him after paying and where the cap is right now. I guess there's always a way, right? We always say that, Anthony, but I think that's part of the issue here. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'm sure there's franchise tags for a year. I mean, let him play for a year. Let's win a Super Bowl with this guy. You know, we've got the firepower. Yeah. Let's go after it. I mean, that's really where I stand. But have a great day. Go Bills.
All right, you got it, Anthony. Thanks a lot for the phone call. Really appreciate it. We'll take a timeout here coming up. By the way, he mentioned safety. I'm not on board with safety like a lot of you are. I'm getting a lot of responses at Sal Sports, by the way, to this question. In fact, we got Noel Fan just tweeted in. Safety would be one of his spots that he would go early. It wouldn't be for me. I just don't see how or where. They believe in Cole Bishop. They drafted him in the second round last year. A lot of you thought if he didn't start last year, that was a wasted pick. And I said, no, that's ridiculous. It's a second round pick. You can't expect him just to walk in and play right away. But he did have a role, and he's going to have a bigger role this year. I think he's going to win that safety job. I think that's what they expect this year. And you have Taylor Rapp, who played well last year. He's got 2 more years left in his deal. I know that he's had a couple injury problems, but I just don't see safety being an area they're going to concentrate early on in the draft. So I'm not with you on that. I think you got to have more impact players at positions right now where you're trying to win that can play. And that, to me, is defensive tackle, maybe edge, I guess, and corner, for sure. We had a few other people. Somebody tweeted in and said, tell your brother-in-law. How about this? Bryce tweeted in at Sal Sports. Tell your brother-in-law Shiloh Sanders stinks. He didn't say stinks, though. Okay. Bryce, you know that Butch is not really my brother-in-law, right? I just want you to know that. However, he calls me his brother. I call him my brother because I call all of you my brothers, my sisters, my family. He's our family, right? We talk about Buffalo sports on the air. Butch is a longtime caller, and I always appreciate him calling. So thank you very much, though, for your contribution, Bryce. You can as well. At Sal Sports, that is getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. It is the Thursday opening of the Masters. You know what that means? Our guy Brian Colziel is going to break it down and tell you how this thing may shake out this weekend. He joins me after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you here today. It is day one of the Masters, the first golf major of the season. And that means we got to talk to our guy, Brian Koziol. It's always a great time of year when we're talking golf and getting into the warmer weather, watching golf unfold on TV. So let's get to Brian right now here on the West Her Hotline. Okay, Brian, here we go. First major of the year. How jacked do you get for the first major every year?
It's the best week in golf. I love it. I can't wait. It usually coincides with golf season starting here in Western New York, although this year we haven't gotten much luck with weather, Sal. Normally by now, usually I've at least played a few times, or at least I think we've all tried to. This year's been really rough with the winter, and it feels relentless. Maybe the Masters here will give some good mojo to everybody here in Western New York, and we'll get good golf weather here soon to play. But yeah, this is the best. I mean, it's you start seeing the promos like literally during the NFL playoffs. Like if you're watching Bills playoff games on CBS, like they're playing Masters promos in January. So it's months and months of buildup, and yeah, I'm ready to go for sure.
Nance is still doing that, right? He's kind of tapered off on some other things.
Yeah, he cut back on the NCAA tournament, but still doing golf. He actually said this week, he was asked about it. His goal is to at least announce the Masters. He said it might be earlier for the NFL, but he said he's at least hoping to do the Masters till 2036.
Really?
That'll give him 51 years of being at the Masters, but it'll be the 100th Masters. So that's what he's hoping to get to 2036. That's, he said, his goal. Now, he said he might not stop there, but he said he wants to be there for the 100th Masters.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And they do it so right. And it's been on there for a long time, obviously, on CBS as well. Yeah, and our buddy Andrew Catalan is a big part of the broadcast now.
Yeah, and there are a couple of changes. Catalan has gotten a bigger role. Mm-hmm. I think he kind of does, I think, maybe like hole 14 now. They don't have the as much on-course reporters and media at the Masters. If anybody's ever gone, it's like the cleanest-looking tournament out of the course. They don't have traveling media. If you've gone, like if you went to Oak Hill, the big groups, you probably have 40 media members walking with the group all along the rope with their cameras and, you know, all the international media. They don't have that at the Masters. Nobody's out on the course at all. They want it to just be the course, and that's it. They do have the tower where one of the CBS announcers would be for each hole. And, of course, also you mentioned Andrew Catalan going in, but I'm sorry, having a role. But Vern Lundquist, for the first time in forever, I mean, I don't know exactly how many years, he won't be on the famous 16th on the par 3, where he's been for a long, long time. And, you know, Lundquist has one of the most memorable broadcasting calls ever in Masters history with Jack Nicklaus in 86, where he's got that putt on 17. He's like, maybe, yes, sir. And it goes in and, you know, everybody goes bonkers. And that was kind of the clincher there for Nicklaus. But, yeah, no Vern Lundquist this year. Frank Nobolo, who's got the nice British accent going, is taking Lundquist's spot on the third, on 16 on that famous par 3.
And I say our buddy Andrew Catalan, because in case people don't realize, he is the play-by-play man for Bills preseason games.
That's right.
Works with Steve Tasker, so he'll be on the call on the Masters. All right, so Scottie Scheffler, chances of him repeating and winning his third in 4 years?
You still would have to say very good. I mean, he's still world number one. He's still dominating every time he goes out there. But not coming in as good to the Masters as he did last year. Last year at this point, he had come off of winning two of his last three events, including the Players Championship. This year, he still doesn't have a win in 2025. He's been playing well. He finished fifth at Pebble Beach. He finished sixth at Phoenix, seventh at the Genesis, and 10th at the Arnold Palmer. So, I mean, four top tens in the legit events, and then he finished 11th at the Players Championship. So, I mean, there's five top tens right there, all at big events with elevated fields, but he doesn't have the wins that he does coming into last year. And he's just been a little, sloppier, you know, definition for him being sloppy with his game compared to ours is not even close, but he's just been a little off here and there. And his putting definitely isn't as good as it needs to be. I loved, there's a stat that I saw this week on Golf Channel as they were previewing the event, sale. It's called bounce back ranking. Essentially, it's what they deem to be a shot that is not essentially hitting a fairway or hitting a green. Like, how do you, what's your next shot? Do you get it back? If you miss the fairway, do you then get back on the green, like back in regulation? Or, you know, if you miss the green, are you able to get up and down? So it's like this, they call it a bounce back ranking, which I think is kind of cool. Like, are you able to overcome the adversity, or are you able to recover after a bad shot? The last two seasons going into the Masters, Scheffler was second and second in the world. This year he's 84th. So he's not recovering as well from when he gets into trouble as maybe he has been in years past. So he's not in his best form, but for sure it's very easy to argue that he could win his third Masters in four tries here, because he's so good. And if he just putts even average, the rest of his stats, tee to green, are always right at the top. So if he putts well, there's no reason why he can't win again.
Would you argue the opposite for Rory McIlroy? A fifth place finish at the Houston Open, and of course he wins the Players Championship. He also has a win earlier at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am as well. Just this whole season seems like a couple of, you know, not top 10 finishes, but is he playing some really good golf right now? Is that indication of that?
I think he's playing the best of any player on tour, for okay. sure. Yeah, I mean, the two wins that you mentioned, that's an elevated event this year at Pebble Beach, a very strong field. The Players Championship's the biggest event of the season up until this week. And he was able to win that in a playoff on a Monday, if you remember, over J.J. Spahn. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think he's playing as good as anybody. We know that the Masters week for him can be a stressful one, because every year he comes in, he's reminded this is the last major that you need to complete the career Grand Slam. And if you win yep. the career Grand Slam, like, you elevate yourself into an elite category of golfers that are, you know, you can count on one hand of how good you are to be in that group. And he also hasn't won a major in a long time. I mean, last year he was tremendous in majors, but if you remember, maybe the most painful one of all was at the U.S. Open. He's battling at Pinehurst with Bryson DeChambeau, and he misses those two short putts, one on 16, one 18s, you know, ones that us amateurs would say, how does he miss that? You know, it's so close. Yeah. And then DeChambeau, that incredible up and down from like 50 yards out on the last hole from the bunker, do end up winning it by one over McIlroy. And remember, Rory kind of stormed off, didn't talk to the media, got in the car, left right away. Really, really discouraged about that. I mean, that was maybe his tournament to be taken there too, to kind of snap this major skid. So yes, it's been a long time, over a decade since Rory has won, 2014, last major. So it's wow. been a while for him. The one thing about others that have had majors droughts is like they've gone away. Like Spieth has had droughts, he's gone away. Justin Thomas has had some droughts here and there, gone. McIlroy, at least through this decade of him not winning a major, he's still relevant every year. He still wins. He still wins a lot. He hasn't really dropped even out of the top three in the world. So he's still playing outstanding golf. But this is the one that, of course, he wants to win more than any, not only to snap the major's skid, but to get his career Grand Slam. And, you know, when he drives the ball, he's the best driver of the golf ball in the world. There isn't the penalizing rough that there is at the other majors. So this is even a spot where he can crank it up. And even if he misses it a little, there's opportunity to kind of get around. So I'm curious to see what he does. He's made a little change this year, which I think's really helped, Sal. They said he's hitting, I guess to make it as easy as possible for listeners here, less shots at 100%. He's trying to hit more controlled shots, maybe more three-quarter shots, flight the ball in lower. And that's really a key to playing well at Augusta National. You have to know where to hit it on the green and where not to hit it on the green, or where you cannot miss and where you can miss when you're hitting approach shots. It's a second shot course, quite a bit, people like to say. Like, who's the best from after the drive into the green? Like, that's usually the guy that ends up doing well. So I think McIlroy's feeling about as good as he has coming in to this event with that kind of style and approach.
Brian Koziel joining me here on the West Her Hotline. Seems like it was forever ago that we were embroiled in this Bryson DeChambeau, you know, stuff that was going on and following him around every tournament. That's kind of calmed down, and kind of so has his game a little bit. He actually, and I think personality wise, he's kind of grown on a lot of people, right? I mean, he's doing a lot of the YouTube stuff, and it seems like he's just now being respected as a golfer. Now, he has a few top 10 finishes on the LIV Tour this year, but how about Bryson DeChambeau's game and where that is right now?
Yeah, he was asked about that this week, about just his like public persona yeah. and like how it's changed and like what happened. And he said, you know, admittedly this week, just 2 days ago in his press conference, he said, look, you know, I I was all thinking I had to do things a certain way, and I realized it rubbed people the wrong way. And he goes, I look back at it and wish I would have handled things differently, whether it was interacting with fans, interacting with media, or even interacting with other players. I mean, remember he had that feud with Brooks Koepka there for a little while too. That was both of them were ridiculous with it. Some drama that he didn't need. He says a big part now of him doing all that content creating that he's doing on his YouTube page that has been very, very popular is that he realizes now, he's like, it took me a few years to figure it out, but he goes, the outreach that I have and the ability for me to grow the game and the influence that I can have on young kids to watch and be excited about golf. And he says, of course, every tournament I'm in, I'm going to do everything I can to win. I still want to win just as much as I ever have. But he said, now I want to be more appreciative of the moments that I'm in, and I'm still going to do everything I have to try to win and study and practice and do all the crazy scientific stuff that he does. But he said, it's made me more content to be out on the golf course in these tournaments in terms of realizing like, hey, this is the spot I've worked all my life for here. I'm really happy to be here. And he definitely, as much as any golfer that I've seen, has gone from a villain to, it was like the mad scientist to the villain to now is almost kind of like a lovable Bryson, to the point that people might not like him because he's on Live, but in terms of just how he's carried himself and what he's doing to the general public to try to grow the game of golf, I commend him for turning things around.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, by the way. And it does, it kind of speaks to, I think, you and I, who are both have been educators, and you are now, you're an educator, you're a teacher, that I think at some point you grow up and you realize, now when I say grow up, I don't mean from immaturity necessarily, but I think you realize that you have a bigger impact and bigger purpose, right? And it feels like that's what he's saying through golf. He has a bigger purpose to hand it down the right way and to talk and to have this influence. And I love that. I love when, I think all of us, maybe you could speak, I know I went through that in my life and say, you know, you have this platform and I know you give a lot back of your personal time and your resources to do things for, you know, for kids as a coach, but even through charitable organizations, little things like that, when you realize the impact you can have because of the platform you have.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, Sal. And I think, you know, you and I are in our jobs in our different ways, whether it's when we work with high school students or when you've coached before, you know how meaningful it is to coach a high school student and they reach a certain goal or they learn something that maybe you've been working on, they've been struggling with, like how good it makes you feel as a coach or their teacher or their supporter to do that. So I get it. And then, you know, even now, you know, in your media role, Sal, I know it's the same thing. Like if there's something that you can do for somebody to like enhance the experience or to make it a memorable day for them, I know you're very good at that. It's something that I always say when people say, hey, you know, what do you, you know, do you know Sal Capaccio? And I always speak very highly of you, Sal, that you always try to make experiences for everybody when they interact with you in the setting of sports and media, like that you make it great for them. And that's something that I always try to do as well, is that realizing that, hey, for some people, you know, going on the radio for 30 seconds for them, like that could be the highlight of their week, or getting a chance to meet somebody on the Bills or on the Sabres, or have a selfie with somebody, or get a chance to interact with a fellow media member or a broadcaster, or get an art. Like if I could help make that happen anyway, it is super meaningful. And DeChambeau has that platform times a billion than what I have with his opportunity to grow golf around the world. So it is cool that he's doing that. And it makes him a person that I want to root for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Brian, since 2001, I was looking at the stats, dominated mostly by American winners from the United States, 15 of them since 2001. But there have been others from other countries, Trevor Immelman from South Africa, Angel Cabrera from Argentina, Schwartzel from South Africa. Remember that one? Adam Scott from Australia. That was a big one that remember from 2013, I believe it was. Here it says Sergio and John Rahm, both from Spain. Anyway, it's a long-winded way of me asking, you know, what the challenge is of non-Americans to win at Augusta.
Good question. Yeah, I mean, this isn't a course that maybe is similar to what you might see elsewhere around the world. So in that sense, it's not like players are used to saying, well, this style of course preps me well for Augusta National across the globe. You know, internationally here, you know, again, I think we go back to McIlroy. He clearly has the best chance. If there's going to be an international winner, it's going to be for him. John Rahm, talent-wise, is capable of it. I'm not quite sure where John's Rahm head is at with his golf game. I think he has regrets of joining Live. I don't know if he'll ever openly publicly admit that. I just think some of the things he said about how, what he has missed about being on the PGA Tour and playing the best players in the world. Like, Rahm is such a fiery competitor. I was really stunned by him. I got Dustin Johnson. I got good Brooks Koepka. I even got DeChambeau at the time. I didn't quite get John Rahm moving. Even all the older players, the Mickelsons and the Poulters and the Westwoods of the world, because their career was ending. But John Rahm was literally the guy. I mean, number one, him and Scheffler and McIlroy, they're battling each week. He's at the peak of his career. And to jump just to get the bigger check when, to me, he could have been, you know, like right in the mix of how we're talking about Scheffler and McIlroy now. Like, that part I was a little surprised with. And he, again, I mean, think about it. Like, we talk about John Rahm maybe a couple times a year. That's it right now, where he is such a historian of the game. He has said so much how he values playing in these tournaments that have meaning. I'm not quite sure if he's ready to just all of a sudden jump in and turn it on when he's playing these events that he says, you know, are tough to feel, kind of like what they're all about, because there is no tradition. We don't know what these live events are. If somebody wins a live event in a certain country, like, okay, like, what does that do? Like, I don't know. Is that viewed to be a great accomplishment? I don't know. We haven't quite figured that out yet. So for Rahm, I think, you know, him being in the mix in a tournament like this, he's got to feel like, hey, these are his only chances to do so. And he's super talented. So, I mean, you know, internationally wise, you got to figure he's a factor. Matsuyama always plays well at the Masters. That would be another name that I would throw
out.
He
did win in 2021.
And, that's, you know, right.
Matsuyama and Rahm are the only non-Americans to win since 2018. It's been pretty much dominated. But two out of the last 4 years, right? You got Rahm, you got Matsuyama. In between that, Scottie Scheffler both times.
Yeah. So, and probably, you know, who else could you throw in that mix? I mean, Ludvig Åberg is a young player last year that we saw finish second in his Masters debut. Super impressive. He's been a little hot and cold this year on the PGA Tour, but there's another European name that that could pop up here as we go into this tournament.
Any changes to the course this year that we should know about in any regard?
The only thing I would say that people might notice is visually there are less trees in between holes, and a lot of that was due to the hurricane that came through. And I know there were kind of two of them within a 2 week span in September that came through, and it wrecked some havoc. Obviously, Augusta National's got the most, you know, biggest golf budget in the world, so they clean up quick and they fix everything up quick. But there are less trees out there in between holes, so I don't know on TV if it'll be noticeable enough, but I know I've heard players say that they're noticing it as they're walking down fairways. In terms of the length of holes, there was one or two holes that maybe have added just a little to the tee box, but nothing significant like there has been in previous years. Like on 13, the famous par 5 of Amen Corner, they added a new tee box there last year. That was brand new, but nothing major in terms of like the yardage or overall look.
One other specific guy I want to ask you about: what has happened to Jordan Spieth? I'm looking at his odds right now. He's down. He's at 50-1. He's pretty far down there. Actually, 40-1. I'm sorry, 40-1. But there's a lot of people ahead of him. Now, granted, he's still probably 25th, maybe on the list, let's say. But what's happened to Jordan Spieth?
Super, super inconsistent player. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you know, as the best short game still, maybe on the PGA Tour. He's been in contention to win this year. He's got four top tens. And he was fifth at Pebble Beach, sixth at Phoenix, seventh at the Genesis, nine in West Palm. So he's had opportunities to win. He's played pretty well. But he's a guy, when you think about the Masters, that the course fits up really well. You have to have an incredible short game. You have to be able to get up and down and have imagination around the greens. And he's as good as anybody at doing it. This tournament, he has played better in than maybe some of his others over his recent years here when he's still been struggling. Because, again, he is definitely inconsistent off the tee, but you can get away with it a little bit more at the Masters if you're spraying off the tee than you can at the other majors. I mean, I'll be honest, I was probably on the radio a decade ago after Spieth won in 2015 saying, hey, this is the guy that can push to be the next Tiger, because his short game was so good. I thought his mental game was so strong. And then he came back the next year and was dominating and was on his way to winning a second one. And I thought maybe here comes the next great one. And if he had that collapse on the back nine on the 12th hole, and that's when Danny Willett snuck in and ended up winning his Masters that year. And, yeah. I mean, Spieth's been obviously good. here and there throughout, but very inconsistent over the last couple of years, even to the point, you know, last year where he had trouble even getting himself into the playoffs. And, you know, he's not even a regular now for thinking about Ryder Cup and stuff like that. He's got a lot of work to do if he wants to get himself in that, back in that top 10, top 12 range to be an automatic for a Ryder Cup, or be an automatic for even our discussion here about thinking about who could win. If there is a major that you said I have to pick Spieth for, this would be the one, though, because he is very good at this tournament and his short game is suitable to get himself in contention here.
Anybody that you like, maybe from, you know, the back of the field, let's say, I'm not saying like way in the back of the field, but somebody who's not getting all the love necessarily, who say, you know what, don't be surprised if this guy kind of has a good showing over the week.
Yeah, I'll throw the name Corey Connors out, which our Canadian listeners, I think, would
there is
know
an international
his name
guy.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah, he has had a really, really good season this this year. He's been in contention in majors the last couple of seasons to maybe break through and get his one failure at times can be his putting, but he's been really, really good accuracy wise. So I think if this week he can stay and have that accuracy, maybe he won't have to rely as much on being outstanding putting wise at this tournament. But I've liked Connors a little bit this year. I'm really intrigued about what Will Zalatoris can do. This is a guy with a ton of talent. I feel like can win in any week, but he's had to overcome injuries these last few years. He says now he's finally healthy. This is kind of his biggest stage since. So that's another player. And a name that obviously maybe people would recognize because he's going to be the Ryder Cup captain this year, but Keegan Bradley's had a good year playing. He said he's not going to pick himself as a captain pick, even if he's been playing great. But he might get if he gets a win in a major at some point here, too, he could put himself into the top six where he would automatically make it, and he could be a captain and a player at the same time, which would be pretty wild. That hasn't happened since essentially back in the 60s and the 70s when they had player captains for the Ryder Cup. So there are some names there. You know, I guess if you really, really want to go far down here, Denny McCarthy, a Porter Cup champion from Niagara Falls Country Club, known to be the best putter on tour. So maybe if the greens get really, really crusty and fast and it comes down to a putting contest, maybe McCarthy gives himself an opportunity to get in the mix this week.
And then it's going to be another month. Quail Hollow, I'm looking at. Is that where the PGA Championship is this year?
Yep. All right. So that'll be a month away. You know, the PGA of America has been really happy with their move to May.
Yeah.
One thing negative from that is that because of the fact that the PGA is in May, they may be trending towards avoiding the Northeast courses.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know for everybody that enjoyed Oak Hill 2 years ago, Oak Hill had it in 2003 and in 2013 and in 2023. And, you know, the announcements of what's to happen with 2033, they're still waiting. There's still a few open PGA championship slots kind of in the mid 2030s area there. I think Oak Hill supports the event and Western New York supports the event as good as any, just from all the other majors that I've been at across the country. I think that, you know, Rochester itself, if you just look corporate wise, sponsor wise, they do as good as they possibly can. But a lot of these times it's about making these events bigger with VIP and corporate and all these sort of things that, you know, let's face it, there are other cities, there's maybe untapped resources in that area that they can make it bigger and better, because ultimately, as we all know, unfortunately, there's a huge piece of sports that is the bottom line. And if they can maybe get themselves in a course that where they've got a whole bunch of areas where they can build things out and create a better fan experience for corporate sponsors and things like that, I can't think that it's solely the weather that's holding the PGA of America back for maybe announcing the return to Oak Hill. Usually, right before the week of the PGA Championship, they usually announce one or two future sites. So maybe in mid-May we'll find out, but cross your fingers. I think Oak Hill deserves it. The course itself, clearly with the history that it has, deserved to have another major championship coming soon.
Real quick before I let you go, Brian Koziel here on the Wester Hotline. What year was the first year you did Sabres pre- and post-game on WGR? Do you remember?
Yes.
As the main person?
It was 2007-08 season. It was yes. So they out of the lockout was the 2004-05, and then 2005-06 they went to was the Carolina series, and then 2006-07 that was the Ottawa one, and then I took over the year after that. So you can blame me maybe for what.
No, but you've been there for playoffs. You've been there for playoffs. But I am asking you because they are eliminated again.
Yep.
but they have won 8 of 9. Does it feel any different than years past when they've been in this position to you at all?
A little, because it feels like something that has always been a trouble for this team, which is personable accountability and the understanding to play discipline. They seemingly have figured it out. I think that while 2 years ago when they were a point away, they played that fun brand of hockey, there was still a lot of questions of like, hey, could this actually, if they made the playoffs, could they actually play in this style? And people always say no, because of course it tightens up, it toughens up. I think that the Sabres have shown that they can play that brand and they could play a little bit more disciplined. And I think they also have shown that they can beat the best team. So it's working against the best teams. They beat, you know, over this last month of good play, they've beaten Washington, they've beaten Winnipeg, they've beaten Dallas, they've beaten Vegas, they've beaten Edmonton, they've beaten Florida, they've beaten the best teams overall in the entire NHL. So it shows that it's not just a fluke necessarily against the bad teams, they've been doing against the good teams. But Kyle Okposo was asked about this 2 years ago when they were playing well, about carrying momentum over to next season, and he said that's nothing. He goes, look, there's new coaches, there's new players. He said, it's all brand new. Everybody has the fresh start. He said, almost never are you sitting there during preseason and getting ready for opening night. Are you ever thinking about what you did the previous March and April? So what can be useful maybe is that they are learning at least what it takes to win, and they're seeing results. So now they just have to remind themselves come next September and October, like, hey, this is what we have to do if we're going to win. The negative for the Sabres, to me, going into this offseason is that I think they went backwards with goaltender.
Yeah.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, we thought maybe was the guy. And the Sabres still, since Ryan Miller, are still really searching for the guy. It shows if they get quality goaltending that also can be a recipe for them winning. James Reimer has played outstanding here. I'm not making a case for James Reimer for next year, but I'm making a case that goaltending matters in the league. And maybe it's time that Devon Levi, you know, makes that next splash. A couple of times early in his tenure with this organization, he's had a chance to take the job and it hasn't really gone his way. And then ultimately back to Rochester, which is probably the best spot for him. Him getting a long run in the playoffs this year would be great for him and his development to go out and try to go win a Calder Cup and see if they can take Rochester really far in the playoffs. But I got to believe if Kevin Adams is back and Lindy Ruff is back, which I believe they will be, they're going to give Devon Levi the shot to be the number one. Where James Reimer fits into the mix, if he wants to come back, that'll be interesting. Is Luukkonen tradable? I don't know. Would you want to even give up on Luukkonen? He had one really good year and one really year. So, like, that to me is the part that's tough, is that's a key spot that I feel like is valuable, that they don't really have a firm answer on going into next year.
Brian, thanks as always, buddy. Enjoy Masters weekend and the 2025 golf season basically starting this weekend, buddy.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And if I get 2 cents here, we got 2 hour tee to green Saturday.
Yes.
So double the time. Looking forward to it. 7 to 9 Saturday morning. Kevin Sylvester, Jeff Mitas, myself will be at Pendleton Creek Golf Club for 2 hours. So almost all on the Masters. So hope everybody can tune in on WGR.
Great stuff right there from Ryan Koziel. We'll update you on the Masters leaderboard. But when we come back from this timeout, it's our guy, Patrick Hammer. He comes back on radio to tell us about, not, of course, Bill's weather. We're getting into the schedule when that happens. How about next week? We got Easter break coming up for a lot of the kids. Vacation time for people. Maybe you're hanging out here in Buffalo. What's it going to be like? We'll talk with Pat Hammer, WGRZ TV2 chief meteorologist, after this timeout on WGR.
Time.
I mean, you wouldn't know it by looking outside that it's April 10th and Easter is rolling around the corner here, but it is Buffalo. That's what happens here. Easter break next week for a lot of kids out there, teachers, parents staying home with the kids, whatever you got going on. I mean, I'm headed out of town tonight. We're going to be gone for a week down in sunny Florida, but I know a lot of you sticking around here wondering what it's going to be like while the kids may be off. So I reached out to our guy, Patrick Hammer. It's been a while since we talked to Pat. We missed him on TV for a little while, too, but he made his triumphant return a couple of weeks ago, and now he's back on WGR on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We go to the Western Hotline and bring in Patrick Hammer. Good to talk to you. Good to see you again, buddy.
Oh, my gosh. So good to talk to you, too. Yeah, I was off for a couple weeks in March. Had a little health-related issue I had to take care of. All I'm glad I took the time, by the way. Didn't want to, but I had to. It was just doctor's orders.
Okay.
All is good. Good to be back. Kind of matters of the heart, something you know a little bit about, Sal. Oh,
yeah.
So, and I don't mean like emotionally. I mean like physically. So, yeah, okay. So that was kind of the main issue. But we're healthy as a healthy and back at work. I'm back. I'm just glad to be talking to you. That is for sure.
I'm glad to hear that. And I will say, just from both of us here, you know, men with children and families as we get older. And I've been an open book about, you know, my pacemaker, and I got that a little over a year ago. And, you know, being someone who wants to tell people, you know, make sure you're always staying on top of your physical and mental health and all that stuff, because, you know, it's important to people. And sometimes we can have a little too much pride, right? And we can have a little too much ego. We know that. And especially, I think, men our age who say, no, I'm indestructible, and we're not. And it's really important to do things like that, Pat, no doubt about it.
Yeah. And when I got the similar experience to you, and then when I had the talk with the big doctor, and, you know, you think you are, you know, unflappable, you know, even in your 50s, only to learn how delicate the internals of your body and the plumbing, if you will, are. Yeah. And you got to keep them healthy. And if not, especially at our age, you know, things can happen. And when you've got kids and you want to be around for a long time, you know, you got to keep an eye on stuff. Even when you think everything's fine, everything may not be fine. So glad we had it checked out.
Yeah. Well, glad that you're okay. Glad to hear you. Glad to see you. Great message right there. Physical, mental well-being, all of that is very important. Yeah. And we want to make sure everybody, you know, understands that as well. All right. So while you were gone, we had a few 70-degree days, and then suddenly you come back and it's freaking snowing outside in April.
Okay. So here's the deal. I went and looked back. April snow is not unheard of. In fact, we've never had an April in Buffalo without measurable snow. Kind of a hard thing to fathom, but it is true. And as recently as I was just talking to Josh off the air, 5 years ago during COVID, we had this like freak mid-April snow brought a couple of inches. This is when we were all broadcasting from home. And here's the thing. We've got the light snow occurring now that's about to change over to rain. But we may be doing this all over again next week. The anniversary of, because that snow happened to fall on Josh's birthday, he tells me, next Wednesday, which is the 16th of April, is exactly 5 years to the date of that snow, and it may occur again next April 16th, which is Tuesday night into Wednesday. So that's a long way out.
That is my flight back. Wait, I am flying back that morning from Florida.
You okay? Well, I'm chasing you. I'm going to be behind you, not making it all the way to Florida, but two states north of you for a couple of days for spring break. And I will say that we'll both be returning around the same time, and it may be a very different feel compared to where we're coming from. So
It's like when the Bills play a road game in Miami or West Coast, and we fly, and I fly in the team charter, and we get on the plane, and it's like 75 degrees, then we land in Buffalo, and it's like, oh my God, why did I not bring my coat, because it's snowing, and it's 20 degrees. Is it that kind of thing? Is that what we're looking at?
So here's the thing. I mean, it is a week away, but it's just this overall weather pattern that really set up when we flipped from March to April. It's just been a cool April so far, and the weather patterns, sometimes they can tend to repeat themselves, which is the case here, where we're getting this cool snow that is now changing to rain. By the way, if you were, don't worry about the rest of the day. It's just going to be a light drizzle or rain, kind of a nuisance, but no more snow. But it's going to stay chilly, and it's going to stay cool tomorrow with more showers. The weekend is looking better. Mainly dry, but still some lingering clouds. But then next week we head into spring break, and it looks like the best day of spring break may very well be Monday, when we flirt with 60. I mean, that seems like, okay. I mean, we did that like all of March. We'll finally break 60 on Monday, and then that's followed by some showers Tuesday and a push of cool air that could bring some rain and snow showers later Tuesday into Wednesday. We hope that backs off, But right now, spring break will not be remembered as a warm one. That's for sure.
I was looking, doing my own research. It looks like 56 is about the average for late April. Is that right? Or this time of year, maybe, yeah. Next couple of weeks?
Yep. 54 to 56 is kind of the average for next week. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be getting to that point and feeling like it's back to average and normal anytime soon after this snow shot hits next week?
I got to believe the trend is for maybe the back half of April being warmer. I mean, it's kind of got to be, you know. Mm-hmm. But I will say that the cooler than average stuff that we've been dealing with will be here again next week, despite a nice little a modest warm up Monday. It looks like it's going to come back next week. So, you know, you got to think about the, you know, Bison's games that have been struggling. Yeah. You know, we've got one tonight, maybe that or is it today? Tonight?
Yeah, well, listen, I don't know if you saw. I'm a big Yankees fan, obviously, and the Yankees were in Detroit the last three games. Well, they were in Detroit the last 3 days, and they were all afternoon games. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of weird. What I found out, I didn't realize this. They were originally scheduled to be night games, but because of the cold air that was happening around the Midwest and Detroit and the Great Lakes, they rescheduled all of those games for the afternoon. That's why.
I never knew of. I know of games being postponed. But not, you know, postponed for a day, but not like within the day. That's crazy.
Yeah, they moved the entire series from like 7 o'clock to 1 o'clock in the afternoon for all three games. And then I looked and said, all right, it was 38 degrees at first pitch the other day in Detroit for the Yankees. And I'm thinking to myself, what's the coldest ever Yankees game? So I went online, I looked it up, and it happened to be, I'm not kidding, literally 9 years to the day. In Detroit, 31 degrees.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, I mean, it seems like the baseball season tends to start earlier and earlier every year. And
that's thinking, right.
Okay, that makes more opportunities for these weather-related issues for baseball in terms of cold, snow, and whatnot. You know, if that trend continues, there's going to be more of this because April can be volatile in terms of cold. March was such a warm one and such a dry one and a snowless one. Heck, we may end up with more snow in April than we got in March. That would be crazy.
I told Max the dad joke the other day, and I was surprised that he had already heard this. And I said, Max, obviously April showers brings May flowers. What do May flowers bring? Mm-hmm. You know the answer, right?
I'm good with dad jokes, but I don't know. Okay.
April showers bring May flowers. What do May flowers bring? And the answer is pilgrims. They come on the Mayflower.
Got it. Okay.
That's the dad joke right there, right?
That's
come on.
Dad joke. What did I hear? Wait. There was a dad. I guess apparently there's a history of dad jokes in the Bills training room on Fridays.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. Coach McDermott told the scarecrow joke. What is it? He told it during our sports segment, and it was so terrible. It was so funny at the same time.
Listen. I mean, of course. Well, that's the whole point about dad jokes, no doubt. Hey, do you have any info on what, like, the summer might look like? What trending as far as, you know, weather patterns or anything?
Well, that's a good question, because oftentimes when we talk about summer and winter weather patterns especially, you look for certain signals that over the last couple of years have been there leading up to that season. And this year there really isn't that signal, meaning you hear the term El Nino La Nina, and that can have an impact on all seasons and can kind of give you a heads up. Right now we're trending into, facetiously we call La Nada, meaning it's neither warm or cold in places that we look for. So, in the Pacific Ocean, that tends to suggest what the following season could be like. That signal isn't there. So the summer right now, you know, I think if you got to kind of look at trends, warmer is probably a good way to go. But there's no screaming message right now on the direction. I do know, though, that when this weather pattern, you know, lets up, and I did mention that it does look like it's going to warm up a little bit towards the end of April. It also looks like it's going to really dry out, too. So we've actually needed some of this rain. Western New York's been getting closer to a little bit of a droughty situation. So, and if we go back to a really dry pattern, that's an issue. So in some ways, a little bit of this rain isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just the timing, you know, it's not good.
All right, so we might talk before this happens, but I can guarantee you coming up soon, one of the next times we'll talk will be after the NFL schedule is released, all right? That's going to be the second week in May, we think, after our after my podcast I did with Matt Bove and I did with Mike North, the schedule maker. I don't know if you listened to it. It's great. We love doing it. And he said they're targeting like May 13th through 15th, somewhere in there. So once that schedule comes out, we know where the Bills are playing when. I'll definitely have you back on and we'll talk about it to have people start planning for things.
And one thing I did catch you say on WGR yesterday, that considering the Josh Allen factor and everything that surrounds him now in terms of his future wife and his amazing MVP. That MVP, of course, does that affect the schedule making? And you said Mike North said absolutely.
He used the word undoubtedly. How about that? He said undoubtedly. And look, I went back and looked, Pat. Last year, this is a good thing for you to know in your position too. Last year, the Bills had 7 1 p.m. games. That's it out of 17. I think they'll have less this year.
That's crazy.
Right. I mean, that's amazing, right?
Yeah. Well, and if you remember, we had so many of those night games early in the season. Yep. We were beginning to covet the 1 p.m. game. Just give me an afternoon, please. You know?
I know. And I think you're getting in line for quite a few 4:25 p.m. games this year, especially at home, given the schedule. But we'll talk about that when the schedule comes out in about a month or so. Hey, listen, glad you're healthy. Glad you're doing great. You sound great. You look great on TV. Always great to connect with you, of course. And we'll do it again sometime soon. So thanks a lot for doing this today.
All right. Have a good spring break.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Patrick Hammer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Wrap up your Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Hey, join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you're going to receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal. Visit WGR550.com for more details. Also, how about this? We have your ticket to 8 amazing golf experiences with the VIP WGR VIP golf card. For just one low price of $129, unlock a season of golfing adventures, including Diamond Hawk, Shamrock Hills, Attica's 10th Hole and Golf Course, Bobolink, and Golf Dojo. Your WGR VIP golf card also hooks you up with free box of premium Vero X1 golf balls from Encore Golf, and score deals at Rick Zurek Golf Warehouse on Transit Road in Bowmansville. A portion of the proceeds are going to benefit PGA Hope. Get all the details and purchase your WGR VIP golf card today at getmyperks.com. I'll be back 1 week from today. Enjoy your break if you're on it. Enjoy the rest of today. Sabres Live up next on WGR.